It was a scene that has been replayed a thousand times. The young man's business suit fit him perfectly, accented, of course, with just the right color of tie. He walked briskly, rarely sat still. He looked far too serious for a man of 28. He sat near the back of the auditorium. He didn't have any time for anything not connected with his career. And he said it well for countless other adults. He said, "I am now in the high demand time of life. When I've made it, when I reach my goals, I know that life will be simpler. It'll be more manageable. Then I'll be free to do what God wants me to do. But first, I've got to get my ducks in a row." Maybe all of us who've lived 5 decades or more can really identify with that kind of dream. High school graduates can latch on to this goal for life. Mothers, they cling to this illusion. Budding professionals and aspiring employees often live with this assumption. And if you listen carefully, you might even hear retirees say something of the kind. If there's anything that we can learn from the life of David, and for the past number of Sundays we've been talking about David, if there's anything we can learn from his life, it's this. Don't expect to get your ducks in a row. Listen to me. Here's what we're challenged with from the life of David. Don't you dare believe that you can ignore God now and put him in your future at your convenience. David learned the hard way. Life does not automatically get simpler with the passing of years. Hope you'll get your Bible and turn to 2 Samuel chapter 1. We're going to start at verse 1. 2 Samuel chapter 1, verse 1. "Now it came to pass after the death of Saul, when David had returned from the slaughter of the Amalekites, and David had stayed 2 days in Ziklag. On the third day, behold, it happened that a man came from Saul's camp with his clothes torn and dust on his head. And so it was when he came to David that he fell to the ground and prostrated himself. And David said to him, 'Where have you come from?' So he said to him, 'I've escaped from the camp of Israel.' Then David said to him, 'How did the matter go? Please tell me.' And he answered, 'The people have fled from the battle. Many of the people are fallen and dead. And Saul and Jonathan, his son, are dead also.' So David said to the young man who told him, 'How do you know that Saul and Jonathan, his son, are dead?' Then the young man who told him said, 'As I happened by chance to be on Mount Gilboa, there was Saul leaning on his spear. And indeed, the chariots and horsemen followed hard after him. Now, when he looked behind him, he saw me and called to me. And I answered, here I am. And he said to me, 'Who are you?' So I answered him, 'I am an Amalekite.' He said to me again, 'Please stand over me and kill me, for anguish has come upon me, but my life still remains in me.' So I stood over him and killed him, because I was sure that he could not live after he had fallen. So I took the crown that was on his head and the bracelet that was on his arm and had brought them here to my lord." Now I want you to understand something. From that day forward, the fortunes of David began a long and impressive rise. Look at chapter 2 here in 2 Samuel verse 4. Then the men of Judah came and there they anointed David king over the house of Judah. King. But understand, that David didn't just snap his fingers and suddenly become a powerful king over all of God's people, over all the Israelites, because the house of Saul and those who were loyal to Saul, they would fight a bloody, bitter war with the house of David. And as the war ground on, it was obvious to David, like never before, it is not easy to become a king. And by all means, it was not easy to get his ducks in a row. Upon Saul's death, Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, briefly sat on Israel's throne. He was not a strong leader. He was totally dependent on his brilliant general, Abner. Abner was a strong leader. He was a man of great character and charisma. And Abner had faithfully served Saul. So you can imagine how bad blood ran between Abner and Joab, who was the general of David's army. These two powerful generals actually met at the pool of Gibeon with some of their soldiers. Chapter 2, verse 14. Then Abner said to Joab, "Let the young men now rise and compete before us." And Joab said, "Let them arise." So they arose and went over by number 12 from Benjamin, followers of Ishbosheth and the son of Saul, and 12 from the servants of David. And each one grasped his opponent by the head and thrust his sword into the opponent's side. So they fell down together. Therefore that place was called the Field of Sharp Swords, which is in Gibeon. So there was a very fierce battle that day. And Abner and the men of Israel were beaten by the servants of David. It was a bloody conflict. And actually, this was the rule, not the exception, as bloody, bitter men fought for power. Eventually, Abner became disgusted with the weak leader Ishbosheth and his weak ways. He visited David and offered him a peace agreement. Abner would bring the rest of the Israelites, the northern 10 tribes, over to David's side. And the deal was struck. And David must have thought that the ducks are finally lining up. David sent Abner toward home with a peace agreement. He sent him in peace, or so he thought. The problem was that Joab saw Abner as a threat to his own position of power. And so as Abner left David in peace, Joab was waiting for him. He met him out on the road, and Abner warmly drew in close to Joab. And Joab pulled a dagger and fatally wounded him and left him on the side of the road to die. Just when David thought his ducks were lining up, now everything goes wrong. Had Abner lived, David would have gained the northern 10 tribes without spilling a drop of blood. But Joab's treachery ignited, as you can imagine, a powder keg of revenge. David tried to defuse the situation by leading his people to Abner's funeral. David walked behind his casket, weeping and wailing. And he told his servants, "Do you not know that a prince and a great man has fallen this day in Israel?" David's path to the throne would be bathed in blood and tears. The ducks never lined up. Just when things started to settle down, then Rechab and Baanan made their bid to score points with King David. They slipped into Ishbosheth's bedroom and assassinated him, and then they beheaded him. And they ran to David with his head and privately reported, "Here's the head of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, your enemy, who sought your life. And the Lord has avenged my lord, the king, this day of Saul and his descendants." David had those two men executed because they killed the anointed king of God's people. Whether David wanted that bloodshed or not, it did open the door for him to become king over all Israel and all Judah. The 12 tribes were finally again reunited. 2 Samuel chapter 5, verse 3. "Therefore all the elders of Israel came to the king of Hebron, and King David made a covenant with them at Hebron before the Lord. And they anointed David king over Israel." David was 30 years old when he began to reign. And he reigned 40 years. Finally, it seemed that David had reached the top. And so had the ducks finally lined up. Now David could be a real king of the south and Judah and of the north and all the lands of Israel. But in the very center of the land, on the top of the highest mountain, the highest ground, stood the city of Jebus. It was occupied by foreigners, by strangers, not for long. Because David needed this important, yet previously neutral city, many thought that this city was impregnable because its walls and its fortifications were too strong. But as General Joab and some very brave men swam through a tiny water shaft and came out inside the city, and from inside the city they conquered the Jebusites. The city called Jebus and later Salaam would now be known as Jerusalem, the city of David. And so David rose to the top, his best years of glory and triumph. He had power and wealth and freedom and immense popularity. It was all his. But life at the top, he discovered, was no bowl of cherries. All the power brought more responsibility and more problems. Pressure began to mount and alliances had to be made, which meant David had to accept foreign wives. And this meant that there would be more relationships to manage and more sons to go down the wrong road. But tribute just poured into Jerusalem daily, into his treasury. Weaker nations paid for peace. And those who refused to pay that tribute, David sacked and plundered them. His storehouses were enlarged and new storehouses built to hold all the spoils. Some scholars estimate that David controlled 90% of the world's wealth. He literally controlled the world, at least his known world. But keeping greedy hands out of the till, as you can imagine, that was a nightmare. The ducks just wouldn't line up. And so life had become incredibly complicated for that young shepherd boy who became the king. finances, construction, administration, transportation, military maneuvers, political strategies, and then wives and wives and more wives, which meant children and servants to care for them all, more men, more wars, more alliances, more construction. David must have wondered what happened to the simple life at the top. The fact is, the view from the top is never what we expect it to be, right? For David, problems multiplied on every front. But as he solved those problems, there was one problem he had without a solution. David, at the top, was now accountable to no one. No one. He didn't answer to anyone. You tell me, who can handle the temptations that come with absolute power? You ever heard absolute power corrupts absolutely? This is his problem. And the truth is, we've all held on some personal dreams, but friendships and jobs and business and professions, they don't slow down as the years go by. They often just become more demanding, and the pace quickens, and responsibilities expand, and volume swells. More people, more things, and more demand on your time. And then there's boards and committees and ringing phones and text messages galore. Expectations. I'm sorry to be the one to have to tell you, David may be thinking, but the ducks are not going to line up. Some dream about the day when they have grandchildren. Won't that be grand? And so you get older and the family gets bigger and more expensive. And relationships become more difficult to manage, and family leans on you for all kinds of guidance and help, and you try to balance the finances to help family, but also retired. Anybody related? And those stinking ducks, they just won't line up. Others have dreamed of the days when they'll no longer be tempted like they were during the days of their youth. When you can, you know, be in charge of your world. And you'll have money and you'll have access and you'll have freedom. And David is screaming at us, beware, watch out. The ducks are not going to line up. And the lust of the eye and the lust of the flesh and the pride of life, listen, they have twisted the best of mankind, no matter what age you are. And so we all, at one point or another, become fascinated with some illusions. Now, God, when I have it made, then I'll have time for you. How is that again? Are you telling me when the ducks line up? And David's saying, good luck. God, I'm going to go all in and I'm going to make lots of money and later I'm going to do incredible things for you. And again, those pesky ducks, they just won't line up. Don't you dare believe. This is what David is challenging us with. Don't you dare believe that you can plan God for your future. A farmer once told his preacher, if I make a big enough crop this year, I'm going to give half of it to the Lord. And so the preacher went a little hypothetical with him. He said, look, if you had 2,000 acres of oil wells, would you give the profit of 1,000 acres to the Lord? He said, well, of course I would. And he's thinking, there'd be still plenty for me. And then the preacher moved on from hypothetical, and he said, well, if you had two hogs, Would you give one to the Lord? And the farmer said, that's not fair. I have two hogs. The fact is, we're not going to suddenly have an abundance of time and money to give to God. If you don't give the little pieces now, you won't give the big pieces then. Because the fact is, we are all in training right now. Right now. We are slowly learning right now to manage our money and our strength and our times and our relationships and our temptations. And that training right now will allow you to manage on a grander scale later. That's what we learned from David. These are the things that got David in trouble. Without exception, the world ate him up unless he was connected to God. Unless he was in touch with God. Unless he was accountable to godly people. David was always in a good place when he was singing and praying and inquiring of the Lord and surrounding himself with wise men of God. He was always in a good place. And the rest of the time, well, the ducks didn't line up. From 17 years of age to 30 years of age, he was actually on the run from Saul, who was trying to kill him. And from 30 to 50, well, his life was blessed. Wonderful. And then about from 50 years of age to 70 years of age, his life became a series of tragedies. In other words, don't think that your life is suddenly going to get wonderful and better because you're getting older, especially if you're separated from God. That's the key. This morning, are you willing to get painfully honest with yourself? That's what I'm asking me. Danny, come on. You going to get honest with yourself? For a few moments, just slow down. Take a deep breath. And determine that just like the green grass grows in the spring, today I start growing. I start growing. Now, here are five questions that are going to help you and me. Number one, are you willing to be totally responsible with your time, your money, your freedom? Or are you going to allow yourself to be out of control? Are you learning to be responsible? Time, money, freedom. Or are you content to just go with the flow? And secondly, are you calling on God? I mean, right now, are you singing and praying, if you will, every day? Are you connected to God every single day? Do you begin every day, God, thank you for today. Bless me, Father, as I serve you today. And then you go to bed with the same message on your heart to God. Are you calling on God? And thirdly, have you made yourself accountable today? Have you really surrounded yourself with godly friends and counselors? People who will guide you to heaven instead of blocking the path to heaven. And fourthly, are you building strong relationships with those with whom you're to be closest? Your spouse, your children, your family, your grandchildren. God considers that to be a priority. And so is that a priority in your life? This is part of preparing yourself for tomorrow and years to come. And lastly, is your home a place of hospitality? Is your home a place of service where you are serving others and teaching others to be servants? Bottom line, stop waiting for the ducks to line up. That's what David is teaching us this morning. Stop waiting for the ducks to line up and start, if you haven't already, start drawing near to God. We still have these colored sheets on the walls. Read it more in 2024. We're still reading those daily Bible sections. And this week we have literally began reading in the New Testament. If you've been following in your daily chronological Bible, you have read the entire Old Testament in chronological order. And now we begin with Jesus. If you haven't already, start reading every day. Drawing near to God. That makes the difference. If you need to come for any reason, please come now while we stand and sing.